This is Central Time. Language is a work in progress. Just today, the Oxford English Dictionary named its word of the year one that's increased in usage by 17,000% since 2012. Here's a hint, you probably posted one in the last year. We'll fill you in about that later.
Now we'll dive into some of the coolest words in the English language that didn't make the cut, that got lost in the shuffle over the years and fell out of use.
Mark Forsyth joins us now. He writes the Inky Fool blog about language, and he's the author of the new book, Horologicon, A Day's Jaunt Through the Lost Words of the English Language. Mark, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thanks for having me on the show.
Well, you've written a book drawing our attention to a bunch of gorgeous, funny, often pretty useful words. So why have they more or less gone extinct?
Well, it's an odd question. One of the most beautiful words, just to say, beautiful words off the tongue in the English language is snollygoster, which is actually an American word. So it was invented in the 19th century and had a pretty good career. And a snollygoster means a dishonest politician. And I've no idea why on earth that died out. My only possible conclusion is that all politicians in America are now honest, and so it ceased to have any useful meaning.
That's pretty much right, yeah.
If only we could catch up with you.
Yeah. The title itself, the title of your book is Horologicon, which is a great word in itself. It means, I know from your book, a book of hours. And so how did you use that book of hours as the format for your book?
Well, the thing about most dictionaries, I mean, everyone's looked at dictionary and everyone has said to themselves, you know, wow, that's a great word occasionally. But when you go back and try and find that word, you can't find it because dictionaries are arranged A to Z, which is a terrible problem, really, because you go off, you say, there must be a word for what I'm thinking of. And you settle down to read the whole of the Oxford English Dictionary or whatever it happens to be. And a guy actually did this a few years ago. He read all 18 volumes of the complete Oxford English Dictionary. It took him a year to do that. But if you tried that when you were in the middle of a conversation, you'd probably come back and find that the conversation moved on. So I wanted to write a book and arrange the words by the time of the day that they might come in useful. So anti-gentacular, which is a beautiful old word meaning before breakfast, best way to describe a Bloody Mary, or utkiara, which is an old English word which means anxiety experience, sorrow experience just before dawn. It's a wonderful word. If you've ever woken up and not been able to, before dawn, much too early, not been able to get back to sleep because you're worried about the day to come, that's utkiara. There was a word for that. And it's beautiful to know that even 1,000 years ago, people had a word for that emotion.
It's beautiful, and it's also kind of comforting, isn't it? You think, oh, there's even a word for that, so I must not be alone.
Yeah, you're not alone. You're not alone. For at least 1,000 years, people have been feeling exactly the same way.
Well, there's a word that's beautiful, another one that sounds beautiful on the tongue that you write about. It's Italian. It's sprezzatura, for pretending to be nonchalant, which I think has a lot of applications in our society today. Tell us about that one.
Sprezzatura is a beautiful word. It's a beautiful word for a beautiful thing. It's beautiful to say, first of all, which is the most important thing about a word, really. But achieving an awful lot whilst appearing to not do anything. And back in the Renaissance, there were all sorts of books about how you should behave, how you should live your life. And one of the most important things in these books, the big one was by a guy called Castiglione, and saying that you should never be seen to make an effort. You should be really good at stuff, but you should never actually look like you really tried at it. So you should be a great piano player. I mean, piano wasn't invented, but that sort of thing. You should be a great piano player, but you should never be heard to practice. You should just say, oh, really, the piano? Let me have a go at that. Oh, my God, it turns out I'm really, really damn good. And I love that word. It's a great word. It describes a great thing. But unfortunately, the modern world is completely against sprezzatura. We're all into the notion of FaceTime, of turning up in the office and making sure that everyone can see that we're there, and making sure we're seen to be making an effort, even if we're not achieving anything.
I could see a teenage rock band operating in a sprezzatura kind of way, like, oh yeah, we rock, but you know, we want to make it look like we're putting effort into it. So I could see a place for it in the modern world.
I've always wanted company reports to be written like that. You know, usually whenever you know a deal is done in mergers and acquisitions, it says, you know, this down to an awful lot of hard work on the part of these people. I would love it if just occasionally company issued a press release saying, we never really tried at this. We just, you know.
We're so naturally good. It just sort of happened.
Yeah.
Sprezzatura.
Yeah, that's the way things happen around here.
So that was a word that was actually used in the English language. It wasn't just an Italian thing?
It was used in the English language like that because, it was originally an Italian word. You're quite right. But Castiglione, who wrote this book, The Book of the Courtier, The Book of the Perfect Courtier, that became the standard work for how a gentleman should behave for several hundred years after he wrote it. And so there was no translation for Sprezzatura. So in a lot of the versions that came out all around Europe, they just stuck with that old word, that old Italian word. I mean, usually there is an English word for these things, but just very occasionally there isn't. There's a beautiful Soviet Russian word, Sturmovshchina, which means working really, really hard just before a deadline, having done nothing for the previous
time. Wait, I think we need to learn that word on the show.
Yeah.
I still have trouble spelling it, but it's a beautiful word, Stomoschina.
Stomoschina.
It comes out of Soviet Russia when you used to sit around at the factory for a month waiting for the actual raw materials to arrive so that you could actually, you know, make whatever it is that you were meant to be making. And then, you know, 48 hours before, you'd realize they're not arriving. But if I don't make this stuff, then I'm going to the gulag. So then you went into a shtomoshchina and absolutely went crazy to just try and fulfill the production targets for a month in 24 hours or 48 hours or whatever it happened to be.
We're talking to Mark Forsyth about lost words of the English language. We're having a great conversation, but we're not really trying very hard at it. Sprezzatura. His book is Horologicon.
You're listening to Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio.
We'll continue our conversation now, exploring words that didn't stand the test of time but are fun to remember and useful. We're talking to Mark Forsyth, author of Horologicon. Let's get to another one of these fun words. Oh, where's that one that I picked out and thought was really fun? Let's do, how about just water? I think that one applies to me pretty often.
Water, did you say?
Zwodder, Z-W-O-D-D-E-R.
Oh, water. Zwodder is a beautiful old word meaning a sort of drowsy, dreamy state. When you're half awake and half asleep, you're in a zwodder. It just fits. It fits with the way you feel and the way you pronounce things when you're in that sort of state as the water.
Yeah, the word is almost like that onomatopoeia. Like it's the sound you would make when you're in that condition.
Exactly, yeah. There's a beautiful and another beautiful word for being lazy, for doing nothing, which surprised the hell of me. But it sort of made sense very quickly. Gongoozle.
Gongoozle
is a word, and I found this, I just came across this in the Oxford English Dictionary, because I'm a very, as you probably worked out, I'm a very lonely, boring man who reads dictionaries for fun, and I found the word gongoozle. And gongoozle means to stare idly at a canal or other watercourse and do nothing.
I like that they specify canal and then move on to other watercourse.
Yeah.
It's delightfully specific.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And I thought to myself, I can't believe that word exists. It's too strange. It's too weird.
I don't know if we can ever actually use it, but...
I have gongoozled at rivers before.
All right.
Definitely.
So have I. This is what I suddenly realized. Next time I was down near a canal or any other watercourse, there's always people, always on the beach. There are people just staring out to sea. By a river, there are always people sitting there just looking at the river, or just looking at the canal, looking at the lake, and they're all gongoozling. And I have this amazing feeling when I pass them. I'm thinking, you're all gongoozlers. And I know you're good. And I'm the only person who knows that.
Not anymore. Well, yeah. I want to talk about some of the words that revolve around eating, because there are some particularly useful ones, it seems, in there. You know, eating sort of has a lot of fad words that pass through. And one that sounds nice to the ear, sort of onomatopoeic again, is the word bristled.
Yeah, bristled. A beautiful word. So sometimes the word just tells you what it means almost in the sound. It's a wonderful thing. And it's the same with bristled for food, or with filogrobolized, which means hungover in the morning. Filogrobolized couldn't mean anything other than hungover, but it's a beautiful way of saying it. And it's a beautiful excuse if you ever need to talk to your boss and say, you know, what's wrong with you? I'm filogrobolized. Sometimes these words just have that this power which leaps out from the sound, from the onomatopoeia.
Here's another good food one that I liked, and I've done this too, to pingle. How does one pingle?
To pingle is to push food around your plate without actually eating it. Very, very useful term, and something which everybody does now and again. And it's the opposite of guttling. To guttle is to eat your food very, very greedily. And if you guttle too much, you'll become a Gundy Guts, which is a beautiful 18th century word for a very, very fat person.
A Gundy Gut?
A Gundy Guts, yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
And
you
amazingly,
went to...
all these words, I mean, I made a point when I was collecting these words that they're still useful. People still understand what they mean in a strange sort of way, as long as you use them in context. They sound right. If you say to somebody, you're a Gundy Guts, they'll know exactly what you mean. There's a word which I found in a very obscure little dialect dictionary from the 19th century. The verb is to poon. And poon means to put a little thing under the leg of a table to stop the table rocking. And that's something which is very, very common. And I've used it ever since. And every time I say to a waiter at a restaurant, excuse me, I think you need to poon the table, they go straight off and they come back with a little wedge of paper to put under the leg of the table.
I thought they're going to come back with a manager.
That's where I thought that was going to. Yeah.
Well, we'd call that shimming. I shim things here. Maybe it's over here in the colonies.
You've
we do
got a
that.
Word
yeah.
for it. Wow, that's
yeah.
brilliant.
Yeah, we discovered that word earlier this year, shimming. We had to do it at a table. Yeah, those are very useful words for, you know, things that happen every day in our lives. And I wonder if there are other words like that that you think, you know, this word is just too good to language in the dusty closet of English, and it should be out in the sun again. What word would you bring back if you could?
My favorite word, just because it's my favorite word to say aloud in the English language, is wamblecropped. And actually, that had its last stand in America. Once upon a time, your stomach could be wambling. You could have a touch of the wambles. But if you were really completely overcome with indigestion, then you were wamblecropped. And you go, oh, God, I can't do anything. I'm sorry, I'm wamblecropped.
Well, that's a good one. Well, Mark, I want to thank you so much for joining us. There's so much to go on there. Thank you so much for sharing all these words.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
That was Mark Forsyth. He writes the Inky Fool blog about language, and he's the author of the new book we've been talking about with a lot of words that we didn't get to, Horologicon, A Day's Jaunt Through the Lost Words of the English Language.
And now it's time to give a shout-out to the new word of the year as decreed by the editors of Oxford Dictionaries.
All right, here it is. The new word of the year, selfie. Selfie. Its usage is up to 17,000% since last year, which I guess means we're getting really narcissistic. So the definition, Veronica, if you please.
Right. So it brings us to the definition. A selfie, if you don't know, is a picture you take of yourself, usually with your phone or your device of some sort. And there are some folks around the office who I guess we will not name by name who say selfies are explicitly for dating websites, and that's why you wanted to put them out there. Other people take selfies when they're driving, which seems, I think we can all agree, like a really bad idea. Or maybe you're at a special place. You're at a concert. You're having a good hair day. And we'd love to know what your reason is for taking that selfie.
If you have a selfie of yourself, or you can take one right now, decent and appropriate, post your selfie or your irritation with the word selfie on the Central Time Facebook page. Looking forward to seeing some of those.
And curious if you have another nomination for Word of the Year. We'd be curious about what that would be, too. Selfie has definitely climbed in popularity. And I guess I've taken a selfie. Have you taken selfies?
I have never. So I picture that. I know I only have somebody else take the picture of me. Or if we're doing a family portrait, my wife will hold the phone out. My arms are longer so I can get a better picture, but I'm inept with cameras. So I drop them or the phone. And so, yeah, no, I'm not a good selfie candidate for myself or for the family as a whole.
Well, you've been in a selfie, though.
Well, Is it a selfie if I didn't take it myself? That's a deeper philosophical
issue.
That's
deep, Rob. Yeah. We're going to have to devote half an hour to that next week, I think. Right. So let us know about your selfies, and we'll be curious to hear and share what you have done so far with your selfie.